You're listening to the Transportini Podcast. Hi, from Open Roads Broadcasting in Portland, Oregon, I'm Lillian Fairbaigh.
And I'm Aaron Parecki. Transportini is transportation economics, one drink at a time.
Today we have a special guest, Tony Ruffalo, to explain what new fee you may see on your gas receipt soon.
Soon, like tomorrow?
Well, more like 10 years. But first, we need a drink. So today we are joined by
Estanislado Orona.
Estanislado Orona. Right.
Or you can just play, "Hey, you bartender."
From Raven and Rose, which is a kind of British style pub with fine dining and nationally recognized cocktails, which is why we have you here. You're our resident bartender at Transportini.
I'm honored.
I'm so excited to have you. So we're gonna kind of walk through the vehicle miles travel tax, and you're gonna give us a cocktail that works for this. So since kind of the theme of the vehicle miles travel tax is that it's sort of this newfangled idea, this new way of doing taxes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you explained the concept, and it seems like there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be a bit resistant to change. So I think an old fashioned is appropriate for someone that's resistant to change.
I love it. I think this is a great cocktail for this one.
It's damn good.
So how would you make an old fashioned?
So I would make an old fashioned by adding 2 1/4 ounces of whatever great whiskey you have. I prefer to use like an Eagle Rare Tenure, which is, it has a dark, deep, rich texture to it. Amazing on the palate. So 2 1/4 ounces of that. And then about 1/4 ounce of like a darker syrup, maybe like a Demerara or a Muscovado. And then like a healthy portion of bitters. Stir it down over ice and add an orange twist. And it's as simple as that, but it's a delicious cocktail, approachable and amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that our listeners actually follow your instructions and make an old fashioned while they listen to this very newfangled concept of the vehicle miles travel
right.
tax.
Perhaps it'll change their mind.
Yeah, perhaps. Enjoy old fashioned cocktails and newfangled transportation finance.
Old and new.
Well, so the vehicle miles travel tax has sort of been conceived as a new way to fix the gas tax, because the gas tax is broken.
So what's the gas tax?
Well, the gas tax is what you pay every time you go fill up your car, but you just don't know maybe that you're paying for it.
Unless I don't remember paying any tax on my gas. I just pay the sticker price.
Yeah, but it's all lumped in there. You pay a bunch of levels of different gas tax. You pay a federal one, you pay a state one, and that's all lumped into the cost of the gallon of gas. But most consumers aren't really aware of it.
So on today's episode, we actually have Tony Ruffalo, who just recently retired as a professor at Portland State University, who might be the foremost expert on both the vehicle miles travel tax and the gas tax, and actually conducted the original experiment in Oregon on the vehicle miles travel tax.
Right. If you look back at the history of the gas tax, the intent was that the gas tax would be a user charge. And the idea was that it basically would correspond to the amount of driving that you were doing, the amount of capacity on the roadway that we're using up. If you look at, you know, when Oregon first adopted the first gas tax in 1919, most vehicles, or passenger vehicles in particular, got approximately the same miles per gallon. And so the gasoline tax became, in effect, directly a user charge. If you drove 30 miles, you would pay 3 times as much as someone who drove 10 miles. And the congestion problem hadn't really developed yet, and so capacity of the roadway was basically all that was being measured. And this worked really well, even up through the funding of the Federal Highway Transportation System, when in 1956, they started the interstate system. And again, the basic idea there was that it would be a self-funded system based on user charges, and all of the money from the gasoline tax and equivalent diesel taxes and some other charges on heavy vehicles would then go to pay for the construction of the interstate system.
So I'm paying a tax I don't know about right now, and you're telling me that I'm going to pay a different tax instead.
Yeah. That's originally how we were going to pay for roads. Once cars came out, our roads, we needed to build much nicer roads for cars to get around. Mm-hmm. And so originally, Oregon, the state of Oregon, in 1919, implemented the first gas tax. And it was there to attempt to pay for the roads. But back then, most passenger vehicles all got the same mileage. But now, there's a huge disparity.
So for example, an electric vehicle isn't paying at all for the road capacity that's funded by the gasoline tax, whereas some other vehicles may be paying a lot more.
You're saying that there isn't enough money collected by this tax to pay for the roads?
Yeah, there's really not enough money to pay for the roads anymore, because the cost of constructing roads goes up with inflation just like everything else. However, the gas tax hasn't kept pace with inflation.
Solution is to raise the gas tax.
It's very challenging to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily going to fix the problem, because cars are getting more and more fuel efficient. People are buying less gas.
Okay, so the vehicle miles travel tax is an attempt to fix that.
Yeah.
How does it work?
So there's a couple different ways that it can work. It exists in a couple other countries, but mostly in the U.S. we've just done some of these experimental trials. Tony Ruffalo conducted one of the biggest tests on it, an experiment back in 2007, pre-smartphone days, actually investigated what this would look like by conducting a, I believe, year-long trial with a bunch of participants.
The idea was to put a GPS system in each vehicle, and then the GPS system would provide information as to where the car was being operated, whether it was being in an urban area and when it was being operated. Is it a congested time or an uncongested time? The only information that was kept was the total of travel in each of the different categories. Then when the vehicle went to fill up at a service station that was equipped with the appropriate monitoring equipment, the vehicle would communicate with the pump, say, I'm part of the experiment, charge me the mileage tax and subtract the gas tax. The pump then transmitted it to an ODOT computer, and the ODOT computer calculated the gasoline tax rebate and the amount of mileage fee that would be required, and then the pump would charge the mileage fee and subtract the gas tax.
So really it's just tracking how much you drive.
How much you drive, and it's sending that information when you fill up your gas.
With the ODOT experiment, we were only based on total miles traveled, so we didn't have to know exactly where the vehicle was. We just had to know the general area.
Right.
And for example, some of the general areas were huge. It was, you know, Oregon outside of Portland. And the only information that ODOT would have is, yes, you drove 67 miles in Oregon outside of Portland.
So you pay just like you would when you're filling up your
so you actually
car.
Pay for this tax at the pump.
Yes.
It gets added onto your gas price.
Yes. Just the same as you do your gas tax and you never pay attention. So, yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is that it would be pretty seamless transition for a lot of people.
Right. So I don't have to like file a report at the end of the year or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just built into how I pay right now, but it's based on how far I actually drove instead of how many gallons of gas I used.
Exactly.
So by changing to miles traveled, will we solve that problem or just create it again?
One of the interesting things about this is actually a behavioral economics technique as well as a transportation finance technique.
As an economist, what I'd like to see are prices that reflect cost. Most urban problems are based on distorted price systems, and I think that's true in the case of congestion and a lot of the road financing. If we had a price system that allocated the cost to the driver based upon the cost that they're imposing on the system, we would get more efficient behavior by the vehicle owner.
So one of the interesting things about this vehicle miles travel tax is it's trying to encourage people to drive less. So if you have an individual cost to driving more that you actually can see, then maybe you would change your travel behavior.
We basically have, you know, 3/4 of most vehicles sitting empty. And so one of the things that happens when you put a price on driving in congestion is that you now have an incentive to take on additional passengers because they can split the cost with you. The other issue that has arisen is congestion. If we think about the amount of road capacity needed, the amount that is required in an urban area is determined by the amount of traffic that flows during the congested peak periods.
A couple of the studies have even looked at charging you less if you travel during off-peak hours than if you travel during on-peak hours.
And so if we were trying to truly apportion the cost amongst users based upon the amount of cost that they impose on the system, we would be charging a lot more for driving in congested areas during peak periods.
One of the reasons we have to spend so much on on roads is we build them for these 4 hours a day where they're at capacity, and then we have these giant mm-hmm. roadways that are totally empty mm-hmm. for most of the day.
The flat VMT is mostly a charge to generate revenue. The congestion-based VMT is also to change behavior.
So one of the goals is that the vehicle miles travel tax not only helps fix our funding problem, but it also helps fix our need problem. And we don't have to build as big of roadways because people are driving a little less, or they're driving less at peak times.
Under this new tax, people will be switching to pay per mile they drive. Someone who has a 10-mile commute is now paying a lot more in this miles tax than someone who has a 2-mile commute.
Yes.
Is that fair to people, given that low-income people tend to have longer commutes?
It definitely was a concern in this. And there's been a couple studies that have looked at this and sort of addressed this.
If you think about the gasoline tax, basically what you find is that lower-income people have older cars that get less miles per gallon.
Right.
And the gasoline tax has actually been shown to be a relatively regressive source of revenue. To the extent, then, that you're moving to a mileage charge, and again, to the extent that lower-income people are driving gas guzzlers, the tax would actually be less regressive, even if it is still regressive. The other part of it, however, is that you look at the distribution of vehicle ownership. It's still true that the lower your income, the less likely you are to own a vehicle or multiple vehicles or to take them on long vacation trips and things like that. And so the studies on the regressivity of these charges are not at all conclusive that in fact is very regressive.
No matter your income level, you can expect to hear more about this newfangled way of paying at the pump very soon.
We hope you've enjoyed your old-fashioned drink and your newfangled transportation finance.
Thanks to our special guest, Tony Ruffalo.
Our resident bartender is Estanislao Orona.
Our chief margarita and audio engineer is Aaron Parecki.
Our producer and chief whiskey officer is Lillian Karabaic.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at Transpertini and hear other episodes at transpertini.com. You can find me at anomalily.net.
You can find me at aaronpk.com.
We always love to hear what you think about the show. Email your comments about the show or your suggestions for new topics to oldfashioned@transpertini.com. If your comment is featured on the show, we'll send you a special edition Transpertini lapel pin.
Thanks for listening.
Until next time.